You can learn a lot about yourself and others when you have to wait. In a crowd, in traffic, at the ticket counter, it's never hard to find those who think the waiting is only about themselves. Waiting is something that we all must do, something few of us enjoy. But throughout the Old Testament, a different kind of waiting is described. Psalm 27. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. Or Psalm 130. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits, and in his word I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning. More than those who watch for the morning. Waiting, in this sense, is a kind of discipline, a form of prayer, a kind of spiritual discernment. Waiting for an answer, waiting to experience God's presence, waiting for peace, for courage. Waiting, not so much being ready and on guard, but waiting as listening. Waiting as a kind of obedience before God, a kind of confidence that God can be trusted, that God can be trusted to act. And then we hear those well-known words of the prophet Isaiah. Those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Here we find yet another twist on what it means to wait. Waiting as the yearning for new life, strength that comes from within, not from within, but from beyond. Waiting for healing and a fresh start after a season of weakness and a struggle for health. Waiting amidst grief for a resurrection hope that will carry those who mourn to brighter days. Waiting for God to fulfill the promises of life, abundant and eternal. And to a people waiting, longing, yearning, hoping, Isaiah says, have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. Isaiah's idea of waiting is different. Those who wait on the Lord are the ones who believe that God is present, who believe that God hasn't finished yet, that God is still at work when the past seems as bleak as the future. Who believe that even then, even here and now, the living God is present, moving God's people forward toward a kingdom of justice and righteousness and peace. This kind of waiting has a purpose. And the purpose is to be a runner, a walker in God's kingdom. A kingdom where God is about to do a new thing. A kingdom where the wolf and lamb will lie down together, where a little child shall lead them in the way of peace. The prophet Isaiah, the prophet changes the waiting game. You can't read Isaiah this week or any time and come to the conclusion that waiting is just about you. The prophet changes the waiting game by reminding us just who God is. Reminding us because we are so prone to forget. And so Isaiah goes on to describe God and God's faithfulness as unmatched and unfailing. Here is a God we can trust, Isaiah says, the one who created and sustained the whole world, the God who is still in charge. Here is a God whose promises are sure and whose reign is secure, which is precisely what makes the context in these words so puzzling. Isaiah is writing these confident words to a people held captive in Babylon. His dramatic language and imagery of God's supreme power fly in the face of the actual experience of the people, exiled, deported, displaced, forced to live as refugees in a foreign land. The original hearers of these stirring lyrics were prisoners, living under the absolute dominion of the Babylonian Empire. The prophet Isaiah wrote and spoke to his people during a time of almost unbearable grief and overpowering despair. The familiar, haunting words of Psalm 137 paint the picture well. By the rivers of Babylon, There we sat down, and there we wept when we remembered Zion. On the willows there, we hung up our harps. How could we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? And into the silence of harps hung up out of hopelessness, Isaiah's prophetic words ring out, filling the void with these questions that call the people back to their memory of God. Have you not heard? Have you not known? Well, of course you have. Has it not been told you from the beginning? Yes, of course it was. Isaiah's poetic announcement is meant to wake the people from the numbness of exile. They had heard, and they had seen, but now all that seemed so long ago and so far away. The people of Israel suffered from theological amnesia. This happens to the people of God sometimes. We have a way of forgetting how powerful God is and what God is capable of. Sometimes we develop theological amnesia when things go bad, when our lives suddenly fall apart, when the diagnosis is not good, when the treatments are not working. We develop theological amnesia and wonder why God is doing this to us. Why is this happening to me? Why has God forgotten me? And sometimes we develop theological amnesia when things are going well. We start advancing in our career, we meet someone special, our health returns, and we forget that we are blessed by God. We maybe are tempted to think that our blessings are solely the result of our own hard work. We suffer from theological amnesia whenever we forget who God is, whenever we forget what God is capable of, whenever we forget that God is the one in control. We suffer from theological amnesia whenever we forget that those who wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. And so to provoke their memory and to cure their amnesia, the prophet Isaiah goes back to creation itself, praising the wondrous love of God. But Isaiah's words are much more than eloquent poetry. To a people in exile, they are also full of wisdom and a sort of defiance. The chapter from which we read begins with these words at the beginning of chapter 40. Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and cry to her that she has served her term. You see, exile is coming to an end. The people are about to go home. Hope is on the horizon. The people must begin to imagine their lives now outside of Babylon, outside of exile, outside of being a prisoner. It's an act of courage that takes them to remember. They must remember. Remembering God's faithfulness in the past so they can step out into the future. But first, they must remember. The Israelites in Babylon were surrounded by religious, economic, and political system that mocked the Holy One of Israel, their God. They were tempted to abandon hope and faith. They were living in a culture completely unlike their own. Perhaps they were beginning to believe that giving in and joining in was their best option. Maybe they had started to attend services at the local Babylonian temple. Maybe they had contemplated bowing down to the king and just trying to fit in. To these temptations and desires, the prophet Isaiah responds with a firm resolve. Remember who you are, he says. Remember that your God rules over the entire world. Remember that you have been called to stand apart and live differently than those who surround you. Remember that. Wait on the Lord. More than 25 years ago, two writers from Duke wrote a book that has had a lasting influence on the church. The book is called Resident Aliens. In it, they describe how in the middle of the 20th century, something dramatically changed in American Christianity. The era of Christian dominance ended. We could no longer assume a shared set of stories and a common faith. Christians, they argued, now lived as resident aliens in American culture. Turns out we share something in common with those Israelites who had to find a way to keep faith and hope alive in the midst of oppression in Egypt and captivity in Babylon. And to do this, they told stories. They remembered together God's past faithfulness, and these stories gave them strength to hold fast and firm. As the authors of Resident Aliens put it, story is the fundamental human means of talking about and listening to God. But are stories any match for the pain and isolation of exile? Are stories any match for sadness and despair? I think they are. I've been thinking a lot about our stories, about your stories, in the past several weeks. In these weeks and months when we have lost so many longtime, faithful, salt of the earth members of this congregation. I've been thinking about the stories that you tell, stories about the ways God's love has shown through them. It's what we do in our grief. We tell stories. We remember. We try to make sense of it all. We tell stories to remember and to remind ourselves that we share a common experience, that we can lean on one another, that we can trust God. We tell stories to remember or to rediscover God's track record of faithfulness. We remember the way God touched their lives and the way God touches ours. And when we have trouble seeing it, when we have trouble believing it, we remember the promises of God. We read the familiar passages. We sing the familiar songs, pray the familiar prayers to remember. To remember that we are not alone. To remember that even in the valley of the shadow of death, God is with us. To remember that nothing can separate us from God's love. To remember that God is in the business of resurrection, of finding a way out of no way. To remember God's yes amidst the world's no. And we listen to the stories, to memories which may not even be our own, but extend to the distant past, that extend beyond the reach of our own memory. We listen to the stories. And as we do, we begin to hear echoes of another story, of a story that takes us back even further, back to the stories of God's faithfulness. God's faithfulness going all the way back to the beginning. We remember. And we tell our common stories, not just our personal stories and our family stories and our GPC stories. We gather here on Sunday mornings to remember the big story, the story of God's love for the whole world. We come here week after week to hear the story again because it is so easy to forget. We come here week after week to find a cure to our theological amnesia. We come here to be reminded and to wait on the Lord. We come so that we can be lifted up on eagle's wings and so we can soar for the sake of the kingdom. It all begins by sharing the story and reminding ourselves that we share in that story too. That God's faithfulness is not something that happened once upon a time, but that God is faithful still. But if the church forgets to remember, if we fail to tell the stories of our faith and the story of God's faithfulness, then an indispensable voice of hope and love and peace will be silenced. Our harps hung up on the willows of forgetfulness. But my friends, we have heard. And we have experienced the grace of God in our lives. And because of this, weary and discouraged though we may be, we raise our voices. And we remember our way out of Babylon and into the future where God is already at work and already waiting for us. Thanks be to God.